You're listening to a recording of a piano recital by a man named Leslie Lemke. It may not seem especially memorable, except after you learn that Leslie started playing like this the first time he ever sat down at a piano without ever taking a lesson. He's an autistic savant, what the psychiatrist Daryl Treffert calls an island of genius. Treffert's one of the world's experts on people like Leslie. He's been studying savant syndrome for decades, and he's known Leslie Lemke for more than 30 years.
Leslie was born prematurely. I had to have his eyes surgically removed. He was a very sick little lad, and so they called up May Lemke, who was a nurse governess in the area, and said, can we bring him, essentially for a hospice kind of arrangement? And she said, you can bring him, but he's not going to die. And so she took care of him with a phenomenal amount of love. And so she occasionally would put his hands over hers as she played the piano in a very simple kind of way. And then when he was about 14 years of age, they watched a movie. It was Sincerely Yours, which has Liberace's theme song as the...
The first piano concerto, the Tchaikovsky.
That's correct. Yeah. And so they went to bed. About 2 in the morning, May woke up and heard some music. And there was Leslie playing Tchaikovsky's first piano concerto from beginning to end, having heard it one time, playing it flawlessly. Of course, she was startled and said, this is a miracle.
Tell me again what he does. He can hear anything once and play it. So in the beginning, you think, okay, this is just an extraordinary feat of memory, except, of course, it translates into mechanical skill as well, which is no simple matter.
Right. That in itself was remarkable. But what happened is I followed Leslie. I have a clip of him where a little girl came up and played Mississippi Hot Dog. And Leslie played it back faithfully. But then toward the end of that repetition, he began, you could see he's getting a little restless, and then he launches into what could be called variations on Mississippi Hot Dog, and you get a concerto 3 or 4 minutes long that changes pitch and changes key. So he's improvising. But then, as I followed him along a little bit further, he began to even go beyond improvisation to actually creating some songs of his own. Leslie has a measured IQ of 58, but at one concert in Texas, we said to Leslie, instead of playing this after you hear this person, would you please play it with this person, a song he had never heard before. So she starts playing. He waits about 3 seconds, and then he hears what she's playing. He's processing and outputting it at the same time. That's parallel processing. That is not an IQ of 58.
How unusual is Leslie Lemke. I mean, you've done a lot of study of what you call prodigious savants.
Yes.
These are people who, as I understand it, have neurological disorders, but then they have these extraordinary talents as well. Is it unusual?
About 1 out of 10 autistic persons has some savant abilities. It may be memorizing license plates or those kinds of things. Then there's a second level of savants that I call talented savants. These are people whose skill is more honed, it's more conspicuous, and it's usually a single element, either math, music, or art ordinarily. And then there's a third level that I call the prodigious savant. And these are people whose skills are so spectacular, if they were not disabled, we would call them a genius. And that is a very rare condition. My estimate is that there are fewer than 100 known prodigious savants living worldwide at the present time.
I want to talk about one of the other savants you have vast experience with, right. Kim Peek.
Yes.
Who was the role model, I understand, for Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man.
Correct.
Similar in some ways to Leslie Lemke?
Yes, Raymond Babbitt in Rain Man is an autistic savant, and the movie was inspired by Kim Peek, but it's not Kim Peek's story, and Kim Peek is actually not autistic. He also is brain damaged. But Kim is the Mount Everest of memory. There will never be another person with a memory as vast and massive as Kim Peek's. Had memorized literally thousands of books, and he would read these books rapidly because he would read one page with the left eye and the other page with the right eye.
And this is not simply a question of seeing and remembering, but understanding.
Indeed, he would put things together in a way that Google might if you put in a word.
He would find relationships between things.
Yeah, he would. And for example, somebody said, what do you know about Beethoven's Fifth Symphony? And he said, Churchill.
Churchill?
Churchill. I said, Kim, I don't get it. Beethoven says, da 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 dum, is the Morse code for the letter V. And Churchill always had his letter V. And so he would.
He was able to access and correlate this huge store of memory. What's fascinating, of course, I mean, he's fascinating.
Right.
But it begins to make you wonder, doesn't it, about what's going on in not just his brain, but ours.
Indeed.
They don't process information in the same way that you and I do.
Right. For example, George Finn, who is a calendar calculator, is able to do these rapid calculations. But if you ask him how much is 5 times 3, he says, I don't know. He's using an unconscious lower-level circuitry. What you see in the savant, damage to the left hemisphere, damage to the higher-level circuitry, and you end up with right brain skill and unconscious ability, which they're not able to describe how they do it.
What does this mean for the rest of us? Because part of this is an exploration into what the brain is doing. And I gather you've suggested we're not going to know our brains until we have a better understanding of their brains, the brains of the savants.
Correct. My suggestion is that we all have a massive amount of memory stored to which we don't have access. Likewise, I think we have talent or ability to which we don't have access as the acquired savant does.
One of the fascinating things, it seems to me, you're suggesting is that it's not just memory of everything we've experienced during our lives, but there's something more. You've talked about what you call genetic memory, and that's entering a whole different area of discussion, isn't it?
It is. When I was in training and people talked about Carl Jung and his collective unconscious, I said, that's pretty soft stuff.
So why have you changed your mind?
From what I've seen. In savants, they know things they never learned. Leslie Lemke knows the rules of music, but he never learned them. And other math savants know the rules of math, and they never learned them. Well, how is it possible? It seems to me that that's embedded there, probably in all of us. And so while I was skeptical of Jung's collective unconscious, I'm convinced that there is this huge memory bank.
Which brings us to the question that I'm sure by this time everybody wants an answer to. Is there any way for us to access these?
Part of what has come to me working with the savant is that we do have these dormant capacity memory-wise and talent-wise. And how can one access that? Well, Dr. Alan Snyder in Australia uses what he calls the thinking cap, puts to sleep the left anterior temporal area with rapid electrodes, the drawing on the right side of the brain, is one way. You know, we're kind of a left brain society. We depend on the left brain in logical, sequential thinking and language, and they serve us marvelously. But I think sometimes it's just a matter of consciously rummaging around in the right hemisphere and finding out what abilities there might be.
Now, you've been studying this for half a century.
Right.
How often do you visit the right side of your brain?
More and more. I do and try to. Meditation may be another way. Real meditation does take us to another spot in our brain.
It sounds as though there's a spiritual element to this.
I think that's true. One of the questions that I ask myself is there a barrier? The brain can understand the kidney and can understand the heart, but can the brain transcend itself to explain itself? There may be that kind of a barrier.
Daryl Trufford is a clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin Medical School and the author of Islands of Genius. Want to hear more? You'll find my entire uncut interview with Dr. Trafford, along with dozens of other interviews about the science of consciousness, on our website at ttbook.org/meetyourmind. Coming up, living with schizophrenia. For To the Best of Our Knowledge, I'm Jim Fleming. This hour, Extraordinary Minds, is part of our special series, Meet Your Mind, a user's guide to the science of consciousness. Brought to you by Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.